with this ceremony called the Cremation of Care that begins the two-week encampment where the body of dull care, symbolizing woes and concerns, is burned on an altar in front of a big owl statue. When that ceremony ends, they all start to cheer and yell.
Welcome to Bar Talk Digest episode 22 with your host Christian Hawkins. Today is May 12, 2019.
We would like to share a prayer with all of you who risk it all to seek and share truth for the betterment of humanity. This broadcast is brought to you in part by Eternal Affairs Media and DarkDocs.com.
Welcome to this special edition of DarkDocs Digest with your host Christian Coffins. This episode was recorded remote with Brandon and Greg from Resist the Grove as they prepare for the annual Cremation of Care protest at the gates of the Bohemian Grove. This year it will be on Saturday, July 13th at noon. More details at sacredowls.com.
Yeah, and of course, since it is an all-male encampment, whenever they do these plays and such, much like the Greeks, men are playing the roles of any women that are written into the script. So, you know, naturally you're going to have a lot of cross-dressing, which, you know, is fine, you know, if that's what you're into. But we've had a lot of fun pictures of people like Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller dressed in full drag with makeup and wigs and, you know, dancing the show tunes and, that's how they roll out there. That's, yep.
Yeah, take it serious.
I have a very interesting thing to read to you. This comes out of the Annals of the Bohemian Club, Volume 7. 1987 to 1996, and it's entitled George Bromley and the Cremation. After researching prior Bohemian annals, one concludes the cremation care ceremony is worth more than a passing notation. No other single event so entertainingly communicates the essence of Bohemia, especially as it relates to the aura of Bohemia's home, the Grove. Most of us have heard that the cremation of care is a concept akin to Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, combined with some fraternal-like ritual. And many of us know that the contemporary Lakeside Pageant is a combination of varied material pieced together by the creative skills of the late author, director, and club president, Charlie Field, who later received revisional input from his nephew, Palmer Field. But few know its true origins, let alone the evolutionary process, which has taken more than a century to develop into its longest-running show in Bohemia's history. The genesis actually dates back to 1872, the year our club is founded by James Bowman and some of his newspaper colleagues, after Bowman's wife threw them out of her home, thus giving rise to the formation of the Bohemian Club. From time to time, Bowman conducts impromptu initiation rites immediately following the evening hijinks program in the rented club room located in Sacramento and Webb Streets. His first selects several new members as his pigeons, and then begins to question them in humorous ways to their knowledge and understanding of duties and responsibilities of Bohemian membership. One of those new members in April 1873 is 56-year-old George T. Bromley, after whom Camp Bromley is named. He has not only a creative showbiz mind, but a comic sense of humor equal to that of a vaudeville stand-up comedian. Showmanship and all. Bowman's initiation rites quickly take root in Bromley's witty, fertile mind. The first appearance of Bromley in the role of a newly created character is on August 30th, 1873, during Jink's program. The club circular announces, "His Eminence Archbishop Bromley, B.C., will preside as chaplain." Bromley's tongue-in-cheek initiation services are so entertainingly successful that within 3 years, it becomes standard periodic entertainment, and the club, 1876, officially votes him title of High Priest of Bohemia in perpetuum. Uncle George, as he was affectionately called, dresses in colorful ceremonial gown for his comedy shticks. He uses a flaming cauldron and a stuffed owl as his key props. And with the passing of time, the ceremonial services have become more elaborate. But it is still a one-man show. The next evolutionary step toward the development of the cremation of care comes in June 1878 during a picnic held in Marin. This occasion, the genesis of the annual Midsummer Encampments, is held in honor of Henry Edwards, four-term president, who, being a professional stage actor, was moving to the New York theater, New York theater circuit. The picnic is billed as Summer Jinx in the Redwoods. 2 years later, during the encampment near Gurn's Mill, later becoming the city of Gurnville, the cremation ceremony is inaugurated. It is a special, colorful program created by Bohemian Frederick Summers with able assistance from High Priest of Bohemia, George Bromley. The ceremony is a simple one compared to our current musical pageant. Moreover, Bromley continued to make the event a comical one, making it tongue-in-cheek, like, "Friends, Bohemians, and countrymen, I come here to bury care, not to praise him, to place his place upon this pyre all our prejudices, all of our resentments, all our thoughts that are in spirit harmful to men and women, and all of our unpaid bills. And let us place here everything in our daily life that vexes or annoys us, hatred, malice, and all uncharitableness. Let us not place here the memory of good men and noble women. Rather, let such recollections live in our hearts for our guidance. Finally, in the name of the owl, that revered bird of wisdom, I place on this coffin all the sins and sorrows of every member of our beloved organization, and from the ashes may great joy ascend." With this cue, costumed imps touch their torches to the four corners of the funeral pyre. The care's coffin is enveloped, and the next moment, there is an explosion. Rockets go streaming up into the heavens. Bursting bombs send forth colored lights into the velvet of darkness. For the whole coffin is full of fireworks, which ascend whizzing, banging, and whirling in a display of pyrotechnic splendor. The band strikes up a merry tune. Bohemians, joining hands, dance around the flaming bonfire until the last firecracker goes off. Then the members fall in line and march back to their camps in a lively, quick step. It's time for cocktails and supper. Bromley exclusively retained the title and character of High Priest for 33 consecutive years until his death in 1909 at the age of 92. It was then that the cremation became discombobulated and the newly formed Jinx Committee discontinued its production, until it was taken off the shelf, rewritten, and restaged by club president Charlie Field into a musical pageant at the Grove's New Lake in 1923, joined later by Haig Patigan's artistic creation of the owl in 1930.
Wow. And all of that was before the 45th owl? The 45th owl was put in the... In 1929.
The owl. Yeah, did you find anything on the Buddha? I remember we were talking before there was an owl, the 40-foot statue of the owl. There was a Buddha statue in that same place. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah,
it's funny. Like, I've seen pictures of it, but in all the stuff that I've read, there's kind of no mention that I've seen of it.
Yeah, I haven't found much on it either.
Up to a certain point, the cremation was staged, like, it's derived from a play that they would have. You know, he died at the end of the play, and then they cremated his body, And we have that play. I believe it's one of the first plays. And it got shortened down and rewritten, expanded into what it is today. It's vastly different than what it was.
Yeah, now it's much more theatrical, and you have Dol Kerr having his own voice and fighting back. And, you know, that's where you get, when Alex Jones came in, the sound clip of, you know, fools, you think you can burn thee, and all that fun stuff. And then they, you know, all the cackling and howling, and then they finally, with all of their power together as the brothership of Bohemia, then only with that they are able together to cremate Care, to, you know, destroy their conscience, from what I understand, allowing them to be able to do anything that they want without any sort of repercussion of morality.
Sounds silly. The whole thing just sounds silly. Sounds silly, it sounds childish. I don't understand what the hell they're doing out there. Do they really need to go to such length? And I don't know. And that's all.
Yeah, I mean, at first it sounds very sophomoric, and that's how they play it off, all of the Bohemian Grove apologists, like the, you know, the Spinal Tap guys that made that that film that never really got released, the Teddy Bear's Picnic, where instead of an owl, it's a pelican, instead of care, it's time, and all of that. And they're just like, it's, you know, it's just a boys' club, it's no big deal. But, I mean, I think that's what they want us all to think, to kind of discredit any really real conversations looking into it. But when you look at the secrecy, you look at the security, and you look at how seriously they take this whole operation, it is definitely, once you read the annals, once you really look into the methodology of all of this, this is something that in my opinion, I think is very sacred to the highest echelons of this organization, which are people in great positions of power, not only here in the United States, but worldwide, members of the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group. These are the same names of names that show up, you know, in the World Trade Organization, Fortune 500 companies, most mainstream media outlet, chairmen and CEOs, CFOs. And I really believe that they really believe that doing this ritual really does, in fact, I mean, you could say it's the placebo effect, that, you know, that by doing this, it's a way for them to kind of feel like, oh, well, great, now I can go on with my business. It's very similar in Christianity, almost, to, you know, when you dip yourself in the water, you get a baptism, like born-again Christians and things like that. All your sins have been washed away, like in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And they think that they can just continue on with a clean slate, and they can do this every year. So they can just always go back to the grove and wash themselves clean and continue to carry out their wicked ways.
It's more like a Catholic, I think, where they're confessing and all of a sudden they're fine. But it's not fine. You shouldn't have to do that. You're not doing anything wrong or anything weird. And I think it's been the secrecy, right? That's been the biggest problem that I think a lot of people have had. Because for me, I didn't know anything about this. And I lived in that area. I didn't know anything about this until Alex Jones. When I saw the film of him actually breaking in there, I guess, whatever, if he was let in there, he filmed a bunch of stuff that is just odd, right? There's nobody sacrificing, right? He didn't really film anything criminal, nothing that we know of. There was some racist stuff involved in it, but aside from that was my first thing. But the first thing that I heard Alex Jones talking about was the human sacrifice and worshiping Moloch all of this stuff, and I'm not really so sure about the whole mullet thing. I mean, there is a 40-foot owl. I don't care what you want to call it and what you're sacrificing. It's freaking weird. I mean, as a Christian, to me, that was odd. It was really weird. And I was looking up this Buddha statue, 70-foot Buddha statue. It was put in the Bohemian Club in 1892. And it's a replica of the Kamakura Daibutsu, and I'm sure I've pictured that. And it was built from plaster of Paris. And I believe it was there until 1927. I also wondered what that was. Was there any plays? Have we found any plays between them that talk about the Buddha statue? It's hard to believe they just got the giant Buddha statue just chilling out there. There's got to be a purpose for it. This was replaced by the owl in 1929 after years of deterioration. Photos can be found in the National Park Service's archives at the Mirror Woods National Monument Archive. So this is real, and there's people standing in front of it. I can't tell if they're sacrificing anything to Buddha, but I don't know. I really don't know that much about Buddha to really understand what it's doing there. But that's odd to me. You replace a man with an owl, right? I mean, Buddha was a real person, right? I guess I don't know anything really about Buddha. So, I found that odd. Are there any plays or anything like that we found that have Buddha in it? I haven't seen.
And even the Fall of Ugg, that was staged on their main Grove stage area, you know.
That was a weird play.
Very
that
interesting
weird,
because
yeah.
You know, that is the only genuine part of anything Bohemian related that I've researched that even refers to Moloch in any way. And,
yeah, it's only like one, right? It's one little.
Yeah, he's one of the several deities that kind of make their appearance during the play, and it's completely not the Moloch that so many people are linking to.
Yeah, I think the whole Moloch thing, honestly, the more I look into it, is just a misconception, and I can understand it. If you ever saw the one of the very first films ever made, Metropolis. Have you guys seen that? The black and white film Metropolis? Yeah, so in that film, the main actor has kind of like a hallucination when he is at his father's company, that all these men are working with these like big machines and stuff, and there's some sort of accident, and the machines end up like grinding men up into the gears of the machine, which I always took as kind of like a metaphor for industrial society and how, you know, it pretty much just grinds the human spirit. It takes our work, our effort, and we're pretty much just fuel for the common collective. And I think that was one of the concerns at the time of, you know, this kind of building of an industrialized society. And then he had this, you know, hallucination at one point where the men are all falling into the flames in front of this big bull with horns, and it's like this almost like demonic devil like figure, and then for a couple of frames on the screen it says Moloch right after that whole scene happens. Definitely rewatch that film if you haven't. Anyone listening, you know, it's on archive.org. In fact, I'm going to take it from archive.org and re-upload it to darkdocs.com, because I think that this film talks about a lot of stuff. It talks about the transhumanist agenda, how in the end of the film they make this artificial human being that is AI, essentially, and it ends up becoming the destroyer that is like going after everyone in the film and things like that, and then they have to destroy this transhumanist bastardization of humanity. And it's almost like saying we shouldn't try to do that. Like that, you're building the Antichrist, you could argue, from a, like a religious standpoint. And so with that being said, and all those references, I can definitely see the similarities. And if you look up Moloch, it's a very similar thing. Again, it's a deity, and you usually place some sort of like funeral pyre in front of it, and you do a ceremony with robes, you gather around it, and you burn an effigy of a child. Very similar to what they do at the Bohemian Grove, but the difference is the Owl of Alexa dates back to the Egyptians, Alexandria or Alexa, whereas Moloch, it's, I believe, a Canaanite deity. Some people also refer to it as Baal, B-A-apostrophe-A-L. But, you know, I mean, if you look back at, you know, most religions and stuff, they're all very derivative. You know, a lot of Christianity was taken from a lot of pagan religions and, you know, do as the pagans do. Because they were trying to get people to join their religion and things like that. So you see a lot of very similar things going on from Christianity, early Judaism, and, you know, and it pretty much just to make the holidays really line up with most people. It's almost like a marketing scheme, really, when it comes to all that kind of stuff. So I could see how over the years there has been a lot of confusion. And I believe that the occult secret societies that continue to do these druidic rites of, like, you know, the Freemasons and these secret societies, they like how confusing it is because it's easy to discredit. Anything, yeah, any information that you have, you could be like, oh, no, you're confusing this with that, and you don't know what you're talking about. It's very easy to deny something that is so ambiguous and so obscure.
In 2011, the first year that I went to the Grove protests, there was a man there, his older gentleman, and he... he was discussing how that he was a reporter for, I believe he said, the Press Democrat in Santa Rosa. And he said that he had written an article, tongue-in-cheek, that kind of compared the ceremony of the cremation of Care to a Moloch ceremony. And he told everyone there that that Jones used that in citation. I don't have his name. I kind of vaguely recall some type of article flashed up in some documentary, maybe. I regret not getting his information. But, you know, for what it's worth, that was said to us. Very interesting. You know, for whatever reason, for... You know, if he got in there and he filmed it for, you know, the way he said he did, you know, Mary Moore's people got him in there. They publicly regret it. And for years, they always cite, you know, he's a crazy person, Moloch, blah, 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 you know, and, you know, focus on the Lakeside talks. That's where it's important. And I agree that the Lakeside talks are very important, and we have unbelievable information about that stuff. But for whatever reasons these things happen, the whole Moloch thing, as it goes, it detracts from, you know, literal cases that aren't, you know, mainstream understood, you know, like Paul Benassi. You know, you have something as horrible and terrible as the Paul Benassi story, and then you have Jones come out doing Moloch, and then everyone can say, oh, Moloch, that's ridiculous. And anytime you bring up Paul Benassi, then they just cite Moloch, in my experience. It's very frustrating for me as a researcher that people only go up to a certain point, and they're not very malleable in looking at the evidence. And you're right.
Yeah, I have a theory about that. I feel like the majority of humanity, I think it takes a really special kind of person that is definitely a minority to be a critical thinker in this day and age, to understand the nuance and the complexity of our reality and how nothing is black and white. I believe we have all been programmed to think in a very binary manner. And I actually did a lecture series at the Florida International University for a couple of years. And I even presented it at 2600 Magazine's Hackers of Planet Earth, the HOPE conference for, you know, hackers, crackers, and all sorts of information security experts and things like that. Jella Biafra was there, and a lot of ex-CIA people and stuff. And my theory on the whole thing is the people, the powers that be, the people that run the countries, governments, corporations, they've made it a point. And I believe that the secret societies are the ones really behind the curtain of all of this. And the policy, the talks, the ideas, they want people to think in a binary yes or no manner. They want people to either pick a Republican or a Democrat. And then the way they program this is with like football, baseball, basketball. Well, you got Team A versus Team B. And what do? They go onto the gridiron or simulated warfare and they fight it out. And then that is how they program us. Sports is really important for this. They program us to think about us and them. And then there's nothing in the middle. And that's why if you are a libertarian or an independent or you want to support the Green Party or any other third party, what happens? Oh, you're just taking votes away from our side. It's us versus them always. It's U.S. versus Russia right now. That's, you know, that's what they're continuing to push, the Democrats, of course. And then meanwhile, the Republicans, you know, they're gatekeeping in their own way. And I think we're in an interesting time where people are starting to realize this and doing their own research. And that's why it's so important what you guys are doing, what Greg is doing, what Dark Docs is attempting to do. Before Dark Docs, we had federaljack.com, and one of our campaigns was writeitin2008.com, and we made it a point to point out everything wrong with Hillary Clinton, everything wrong with John McCain, everything wrong with Barack Obama, and highlight Cynthia McKinney, Ralph Nader, Dennis Kucinich, and all of these third-party candidates that were actually just, you know, trying to give an alternative, which I think is very important. What happens is that, again, you have the Democrats and the Republicans shooting it down, and they have the same argument. They say, if you vote for a third party, you're simply just taking votes away from us. And that scares people into groupthink, into herd mentality, and everyone wants to win. Like, they don't care if they're right or wrong, they just want to win. So you go for the biggest team. And that has been a detriment to our society, and that's the problem with democracy. And in my opinion, that's why I believe that the Founding Fathers made us a federal republic. That is why we have an electoral college system, so that way when everyone's voting, one vote, one person, one vote doesn't work because it's mob mentality. And then what's going to end up happening is the states with the highest population, like New York and California, based on what they vote, that's who the president is going to be. So the other 48 states don't matter in a democracy. And that is why we need to keep our electoral college. We need to keep our federal republic. And that is going to maintain the balance. What do you guys think about all that?
Absolutely. You can't have mob mentality. It's kind of what we have now. That's what social media is. It's just trying to be into their group. That's what this whole human growth thing is, too. It's group thing. And then think for yourself and don't try to tell you what you should think, but give you the data that you should think about. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, what's the old adage? Democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner, whereas a constitutional republic is a well-armed sheep contesting the votes.
Yeah. I have another quick cremation entry I want to read to you.
Oh, can I just say
one
thing? Can I say one thing before we do that? I was looking at volume 4 of the Bohemian Club, their books, and on page 161, there is one mention of a Daifatsu unit. So I'm going to look more into that, but there is a mention of a play that is called Daifatsu Change.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Greg.
Yeah, we're losing you, Greg.
Okay. I'm going to try to move. Go ahead and go.
Hello. You're like the echo chamber.
A little muffled. You on the speakerphone?
No.
Okay. Yeah, sorry if I have a little background noise on my end. We were at a pool. There was a pool party a lot of our friends were at. And, you know, Mother's Day and such. Happy Mother's Day for all you mothers listening out there. And it started raining, so then I started walking in this direction, and then some kids were yelling, so I walked in that direction, and then there was a fountain that was very loud, so I apologize if I have any unwanted noise or any wind blowing in my phone. I'm OTG. I'm not in front of a computer right now. I'm on my cell phone, so... soon we will have new microphones for this operation. And that brings us to our next point. If you see value in these kinds of transmissions, we have no advertisers other than, of course, Eternal Affairs Media, Blog Talk Radio, and their advertisers. We could use any support that you would like to give our way. As they say on the No Agenda show, it's value for value network, which means that if you see value in this and you feel that it was valuable to you, can you put a dollar amount on that? Maybe you could spare a dollar or two. Maybe if you're like, man, thank you so much for talking about the stuff that the mainstream media is not talking about. You know what? I can afford $50. You know what? I just got a raise at my job and I could throw you $500. You know, anything that you give to us, we're going to take that money. And then we're going to not work for someone else to pay the bills, and because now we're working for you. And then we will continue to bring out new podcasts. DarkDocs.com is currently working on a new full-length documentary film that keeps getting longer and longer as I'm editing the thing, that it might even turn into a miniseries about exposing Pedo Swim, about how Adult Swim and Justin Roiland, Dan Harmon, the creators of Rick and Morty, have been putting out pedophilic cartoon and snuff films where they are encouraging people to have what they call natural and consensual relationships with children. And some of their content includes rape, murder, and all sorts of stuff. We have all kinds of terrible clips. And there's a lot of occult symbolism that they throw in there. I personally believe that they are Satanists. And that's just not a speculation. They throw a lot of occult symbols into their stuff, and I don't think it's an accident. So, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at what people do, what people are trying to put out into the public, especially within the view of children. And on the Dark Docs Network on Facebook, as long as we can exist there, we've been exposing pedophile grooming, pedophile networks within social media. and within advertising campaigns. Right now, there is a poster up in Toronto subways that shows three naked men having sex with each other. Anybody on the subways can see this thing, and it links to a website called thesexyouwant.ca. And if you go to this website, it's nothing but cartoons of like really hardcore pornography, and anyone can go to this. It doesn't have any 18 or over kind of thing like most bars or alcohol or cigarette companies might have. So anyone can look at this hardcore cartoon pornography, as well as on Vimeo.com, all of Justin Roiland's stuff that we got from for our documentary. They are just putting this stuff in the view of children. Children can navigate to this stuff. If you're a fan of Rick and Morty, it doesn't take long when you're on YouTube or any website to be redirected to this kind of terrible stuff. So it is our job that we have taken it upon ourselves to expose this stuff, to call it out for what it is, and hopefully we will have some sort of legal standing at some point once enough awareness has been raised on the topics to outlaw these guys and hold these criminals to justice, because that's exactly what they are. Anyone pushing for sex with minors, adults having sex with minors, you're a criminal. I mean, that's a criminal act, and if you're advocating for it, that makes you a criminal. So that's what we do here. We make sure to protect the next generations from being molested, essentially, because it's a vicious cycle. You'd find the majority of children that have been molested, they end up kind of going into that. That's what happened to Paul Benassi. It's a vicious cycle. You get molested, you the power is taken away from you, and then when you become an adult, you want to regain that power, and sometimes, if you're damaged enough, you will then injure another child, and it will keep going. We want to stop this vicious cycle from happening by raising awareness and letting people know that this is not okay. Child drag shows are not okay. They are not acceptable behavior within our modern society, and they're working really hard to make sure that your children are going to become cross-dressing prostitutes for the elites. And they will end up at the Bohemian Grove and having sex with adult men. And that is not okay. So please, if you think that these have value, these shows have value, consider donating. With that being said, any notes from Greg? And then we can hear the next annal from Brendan.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's much better.
Sound great.
All right. I my whole computer just crashed, but thankfully I'm on my cell phone, so that's okay. I'm going to try to log back in.
Yeah, your cell phone sounds much better than your computer. That's for sure.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to stay on the cell phone anyways, but I want to just make sure. Yeah. Anyways. Now the only thing that I was going to say is in the book number 4, volume 4 of the Bohemian Grove, books here on page 161, it does mention that there is a play of the actual Buddha statue. So I'm going to look more into that. That's all I wanted to say. Excellent. Just on that.
Oh, great. You did find something. That's fantastic. Yeah, because I always wondered why they would have a Buddha there, of all things.
Yeah.
Good find, Greg.
All right, great. Well, we're going to have a couple more of these Bohemian Grove special edition episodes gearing up to the midsummer cremation of care ceremony, where we're all going to be meeting again in person 1 year later. And if you guys want to see what we shot and what you guys, I mean, the amazing footage, our documentary would be nothing without your mini documentaries all interwoven into it. It's like inception of documentaries. At darkducks.com, Sacred Owls, They Are Here to Save the World is available on DVD, $13. We will ship it to you anywhere in the world. Sometimes you're far enough that the shipping alone costs more than $13, but we're happy to eat those costs because we're happy that you want a copy of our DVD. If you buy two of them, you get one free. And that's how we roll. And we're going to be putting out DVDs of all of our original content, but that DVD in particular has footage shot at the Bohemian Grove protests from 2012, 2014, and 2016 when you guys visited, and commentary, meeting with staff at the Grove and their perspectives on what we do, and you know, it's really interesting how even people that work there, they act like they don't know anything, but I think they know a little bit more than they let on, that's for sure.
Just teasing us. They're teasing us with it.
They love it. They love that you guys come out there, and I mean, I think, you know, it would be an otherwise very boring job if you guys didn't show up.
Yeah, I agree.
The one guy on the golf cart back in 2016, he used to work for the Secret Service. Is that correct?
Yeah,
Tony.
Yes, Tony was Secret Service for Gerald Ford. He was there when Ford was shot at twice.
Wow.
Interesting guy,
so
that Tony. So he said.
Yeah. So yeah. He said. Well. It was,
they're
it was
a bunch of liars.
He wasn't elected. Yeah, the debauchery of the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I like to have a couple beers, you know, get loose.
Yeah,
I'm drinking one of these spiked Agua Frescas. Sparkling cucumber lime. It contains 4% alcohol. It's like the seltzers, you know, the flavored seltzers, but like they're spiked, you know, they're a little, you got a little booze in there. And, you know, I would probably enjoy, you know, hanging out at the Bohemian Grove with some of these assholes and whatever. But the fact that, like, their bosses, the people in the highest echelons of this stuff, these are the people that are, again, making foreign policy that is funding the military-industrial complex, that is funding the drones that are dropping bombs on innocent women and children, men, you know, all over the third world. And they do this for depopulation. They do this to kill innocent people because they want their oil. They want their lands, and they don't care about you. They want you dead.
And sure,
that's what it comes down
care.
To.
This is a perfect segue into Lakeside Talks.
Yeah.
I'll get back to the cremation another time. This is good. This is written by Bohemian Kevin Starr in the Annals, Volume 7, 87 to 1996. Most notoriety one suspects attaching itself to the annual encampment derives from the Lakeside Talks. From the Lakeside podium over the years, heads of state and former heads of state of various nations, literary and musical figures, captains of industry, scholars and university leaders, artists, diplomats, scientists, and just plain bohemians have filled their allotted 30 minutes, in most instances, with wise and pithy discourse. Like everything else in the Grove, the Lakeside Talks is governed by ritual and protocol. In the year preceding the encampment, the Lakeside Committee meets periodically in the City Club and draws up its list of speakers. Some, but not all speakers are Bohemians. Others are guests of Bohemians scheduled to attend the coming encampment. Still others are expressively invited by the board of directors at the request of Lakeside Committee to attend the encampment and give a Lakeside talk. From whatever source, Bohemian or guest, a full array of speakers is scheduled by May or June at the latest for each day of the encampment. While every encampment day is equal as far as Lakeside Talks is concerned, some encampment days, especially weekend days, are more equal than others, given the fact that these days witness a larger population in the Grove. Hence, a general pattern of subject matter has emerged in Lakeside Talks. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are reserved for more specialized topics. That way, Bohemians who wish to stay through midweek to hear a particular lakeside talk may do so. On Thursday, the scope of talk widens, edging into questions of politics, diplomacy, and public affairs, which tend to dominate weekend presentations. Sunday talks are usually reserved for more philosophical subjects. The last Saturday, by tradition, is reserved for a distinguished speaker who is asked to give a talk addressing the big picture, the long-range issues in his field of expertise. Thus, the last Saturday and the Sunday talks are the most philosophical and have accounted for some of the most memorable lakeside talks ever given in the Grove. The extent and manner of presentation of lakeside talks is equally controlled. From noon to 12:30, there is an organ concert. Noon usually finds the lakeside relatively empty, with a scattered figure or two lolling on the lawn, should it be a sunny day. By 12:20 or so, a considerable crowd is gathered as Bohemians converge from throughout the Grove to the lakeside. The scene is most impressive. Midday light, for one thing, makes the green of the overhead trees seem more green, even more shimmering. The lake itself is a riot of green and colored water flowers. Dragonflies skim above the surface of the lake, and depending on the vagaries of their humor, a chorus of frogs can be heard in all its Aristophane splendor. By 12:25 or so, the speaker will have arrived, as well as most of the Bohemians attending the event. In the day, if the day is sunny, protocol allows for Bohemians to doff their shirts, lie on the grass, and indulge in a half hour's heliotherapy. At the 1996 encampment, Governor Pete Wilson remarked that he had hoped that it would be a cloudy day, that he might avoid the necessity of speaking to a sea of hairy armpits. If the speaker is a noted celebrity, a former president, perhaps a well-known movie star, a nationally ranked journalist, a cluster of kibitzers might have already formed around him. At precisely 12:30, the organ concert ends, and a member of the Lakeside Committee moves to the podium and calls for a round of applause for the organist. The Lakeside Committeeman then introduces the day's speaker. Introductions are brief and to the point. Upon being introduced, the speaker will stride from somewhere in the vicinity of the organ to the podium and begin his talk, which concludes promptly at 1 o'clock. Following the talk and the applause, the speaker will then mix informally with Bohemians for informal discussion. Now, we know that in 1988, the former head of the FBI and then CIA director gave a lakeside chat in which he says, "But we have had a number of major successes this year." And then in the copy of the speech, which was put out by the CIA in a FOIA request, following that sentence, it's all redacted. So, what the hell?
Right, and these lakeside chats go so much further. I mean, the Manhattan Project was first discussed at the Grove, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yes.
You know, so these people have been developing nuclear weapons in order to murder billions of people here at the Grove. It's not just a frat. It's not just sophomoric cavorting of intellectuals and, just blowing off steam. But they are actually talking about real policy. They are actually about destroying lives.
In the annals, they give a year, it gives it year by year, and it tells you what topics were discussed and by who. It's pretty amazing. If you'd like, I'd like to go through 1988 to 1991. I think there's some good stuff here.
Please do.
Ready for that? All right. The 1988 encampment enjoyed a equal array of interesting lectures. Bohemian director Tom Terrell discussed the Chautauqua movement, a talk later published in Library Notes. Hoover Institution scholar Martin Anderson discussed the power of ideas in revolutionary situations. Former Secretary of the Air Force Thomas Reed evaluated the SDI initiative. Financier Edward Reagan outlined the tremendous power exercised by pension funds in the American investment market. Chronicle musical critic Robert Commenday discussed the parameters and obligations of criticism. Scientist Bernard Oliver weighed the possibilities of extraterrestrial life. CIA Director Judge William Webster evaluated his organization in light of the contemporary world situation. Smithsonian historian and curator Joseph Korn III probed the question of how museums should treat the machine. Bancroft Library Director James D. Hart outlined the origins of his institution. Physician Henry Ritter separated facts from fiction regarding the prostate. Historian Stephen Ambrose evaluated the career of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Robert Merkel evoked the war on drugs. On the final Saturday, veteran corporate sage Ed Littlefield, tongue slightly in cheek, asked Bohemians if they were still enjoying the corporate climb. That was 1988. 1989, Lakeside witnessed an equally impressive array of talent. Astronaut Frank Borman talked on the future of manned spaceflight. Media expert Louis Bucardi, the media and politics. Foundation activist William Hudhunt, competition and compassion in these United States. Developer Arthur Davis, the super sports arenas. Novelist Alan Drury, advising consent. Artist activist Leonard Kingsley, the museum scene in San Francisco. Pundit Roald Sagdiev, whither the Soviet Union? United States Air Force General John Chain, the Strategic Air Command. Lawyer William Koblenz, the value of regional government. Museum of Modern Art Director John Lane, Modern Art. Banker Lewis Coleman, Third World Debt. Editor, columnist, novelist William F. Buckley Jr. spoke on Whitaker Chambers. And publisher Malcolm Forbes on competition. That was 89. 1990. U.S. Senator Alan Simpson opened the 1990 encampment with a discussion on the obligations of citizenship. Admiral Bobby Inman balanced the question of arms control with the changes occurring in Russia. Howard Putnam discussed management in the times of stress. San Francisco Fine Arts Museum Director Harry S. Parker III addressed his favorite topic, museums and art. Undersea explorer Robert Ballard quite naturally discussed undersea exploration. And Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia asked the question of how one might judge judges. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger discoursed on American foreign policy. Admiral William Crow probed the balance of power. Historian Charles Longsworth used a discussion of colonial Williamsburg to address the larger question of how does one make history live. Organ maker Jack Bethers discussed the revival of great organs, outdoor and indoor, in the United States. Physician Henry Ryder, Jr. asked the simple question, impotence, who needs it? Scientist Tom Lovejoy asked Bohemians to consider the endangered condition of tropical rainforests in the Amazon. On the last Saturday, Stanford philosopher John Gardner asked the Bohemians to consider the issues behind the issues. Here's my favorite one, 1991. The 1991 encampment opened with a flourish as Mikhail Tatuta, San Francisco bureau chief for Soviet television, shared his observations on the United States. The compliment was returned the next day when Oberlin president Frederick Starr asked the question, USSR. Smaller but better. media specialist William Armstrong followed with a discussion of congressional reform. Stanford professor of economics Roger Noll investigated the future of the sports business, while UC Berkeley Vice President Emeritus Earl Bolton asked the Bohemians to consider the mystery of laughter. Academic dominance of the Lakeside podium continued with Stanford medical professor Robert Gimplis assessing the question of whether or not anyone could afford medicine in the United States by the year 2000. As if in reply, the next day, a Thursday, former HEW Secretary Joseph Califano attempted to answer Gimplis' question with a discussion of medical economics. Civil rights activist Vernon Jordan followed with a talk entitled The Coming Revolution. Former West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt addressed the enormous problems of the 21st century. Former New York Public Library President Barton Gregorian, recently appointed president of Brown University, dissected the question of an American individualism the following day. Former Attorney General Elliot Richardson asked Bohemians to consider the New World Order. And Gilbert Grosvenor, president and board chairman of National Geographic Society, urged why America must get an A in geography and how you can help.
Hold on. I'm gonna pause you there. What was the one about accepting the New World Order? Who was saying that one?
That was former Attorney General Elliot Richardson.
Okay, a couple of things. Do you have that in that annal? Like, are you reading like a table of contents kind of thing there?
I'm reading the summary of what took place by year topic wise. I will try to find that actually.
Yeah, I would like you to, if not on this episode, maybe if you can find it for the next episode. Like, I would like to see what their sales pitch is for accepting the New World Order. Now, I mean, I'm sure anyone listening to this show is familiar. That's the term for global governance. That is what the League of Nations, that then became the United Nations, it was their goal to have a one world government, a one world currency, and a one world religion was discussed under this concept of a New World Order, which was, there was a book by H.G. Wells, the creator of The Time Machine and War of the Worlds, of course, made him famous. He wrote a book, The New World Order. And then Adolf Hitler, he wrote a book, The New World Order as well, talking about the same concept of a one world government where we all live under it. So I'm just curious to see what they said. Also, what perked my ears up is, of course, you have former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, which he wrote the National Security Study Memorandum 200 in 1979, which called for depopulation of the Third World, spelled out and specifically broken down on how you can pull off killing billions of people to maintain a number pretty much 10% of the world can live in this New World Order. 90% plus of humanity must die through war, famine, and poison. And if you read, we have it at darkdocs.com, the NSSM 200, National Security Study 200, 1979, from Henry Kissinger. And what's really important about this document is that's exactly what's been happening since 1979. You have war. We have countless war under George W. Bush, you know, and Dick Cheney. They said this would be a 30-year war, and some said it would be an endless war. We will always be at war with Eurasia. We will never be at war with Eurasia, as they said in 1984 from I'm drawing a blank here. Otis Huxley wrote Brave New World. Who wrote 1984? George Orwell, yes.
George Orwell.
And, of course, yeah, we have to maintain a constant state of war in order to continue the budget spending, the military-industrial complex. 9/11, the 7/7 bombings were used as pretext for war in order to go into Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, and we continue these war efforts. And then, you know, there's then everyone got sick of W and all of the death, mm-hmm. and all of the war. And then they will throw in a Democrat. They threw in Barack Obama, which continued the same policies. The Patriot Act. He signed Patriot Act 2. He signed the National Defense Authorization Act and continued to strip civil liberties of American citizens while continuing to bomb people overseas. And then he brought in drone strikes. He authorized us not even showing up on our own, but, you know, bringing Skynet-style robots to kill people in other countries. Now, that's the war. Famine. We have been putting sanctions on countries, unprovoked, to make sure that they don't get the food, they don't get the clean water. Once they have water filtration systems in place for their communities, we hire military groups and private mercenaries and, you know, like Blackwater to go over there and bomb their clean water facilities in order to make sure that they have dirty water that is contaminated with sewage that will continue to make them sick and die. And then there's poison. You want to push fluoride into the water supply, like the Nazis did. The Nazi scientist at IG Farben, which became Bayer Pharmaceutical. Now, Bayer Pharmaceutical are the ones who make aspirin. They're the ones who make your MMR vaccines that are being pushed on you, and they're making, you know, trillions of dollars off of your ignorance and scaring you into, you know, getting these measles vaccines that will give you measles, but a whole lot more. There is cadmium, all kinds of heavy metals in these vaccines, and you don't even know what's going in them because they're constantly changing the formula, and it's proprietary to make sure that even if you ask for the insert and they, you know, the doctors will be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't be an anti-vaxxer. We're pumping these things into our kids, and
yeah.
It's all being carried out. And Henry Kissinger has been pushing for this new world order with a depopulation agenda using war, famine, and poison. Also, you mentioned Helmut Schmidt, which is the German chancellor. I believe he is, at one time, he was the president of the European Central Bank. And he is also a member of the Bilderberg Group. And Sacred Owls, in our very first EP, we had a song called Hell's Bells, where we talked about all of these guys at Bilderberg and how in the Alex Jones film Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, they were protesting the Bilderberg Group. And you had, again, Henry Kissinger, Helmut Schmidt, David Rockefeller, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, all getting together to try to see how they can market this new world order. And that was the founding of the European Union. That was the attempt at the North American Union, which failed, which is fantastic. But, you know, the infrastructure is there, and they're going to continue to push it. The next time that there's a Democrat in office, they're going to continue to push for open borders to Mexico and Canada. And, of course, I love my brothers and sisters in Mexico and Canada. In fact, Sacred Owls is playing our very first international show in Juarez, Mexico, on this tour in July. You can see more information on that at sacredowls.com. But we need to have borders. And the reason why is because if you just have open borders and people just coming and going as they want, you have no idea how to maintain the infrastructure of your citizens. You have no idea how to provide for these citizens because there's no accountability. And we are a sovereign state. We are the United States. And we are not part of any kind of union, because consolidation of power is going to enslave us. We need to maintain our national sovereignty. So does Mexico, and so does Canada. We can have alliances. We can work together for common goals, but we need to stay independent. Because what's going to happen is once you have an American, North American Union, and you have your European Union, which is a catastrophe, might I add. That's what Brexit is all about, and how every time everyone votes against the European Union, they have a re-vote, because your votes don't matter over there, and your votes don't even matter over here. If they don't like the way you guys are voting, guess what? They're going to throw the election. And once we have all these unions, we're going to go to war. There's going to be a war against the North American Union and the European Union. And everyone's going to be sick of that war. And, you know, we're going to have record numbers of deaths. And then the only solution is for us all to just consolidate under the United. The United Nations is going to take over. And you're going to have the blue helmets. You're going to have, you know, UN troops on our streets telling us what to do. And that is what pretty much is the premise of the film Gray State that never got released. And the creator of the film is believed to be in a staged murder-suicide where him, his wife, and his daughter were killed. And we're going to be talking about that on Tuesday with one of the co-creators of the trailer and working on the film, as well as Greg Fernandez, who has been looking at what you know you have been doing on this topic, and I mean you've put in some time. You have something like 40 episodes, you know, breaking down the crime scene photos, and I mean it's amazing how much work you've put into researching this. And I can't wait to hear your deconstruction of what you think actually happened, you know, in this atrocity, to try to silence the independent media and warning people against these ideas and what's happening.
Well, that's been the biggest challenge with it. And yeah, I look forward to that. I can give you a little spoiler if you want a spoiler right now.
Yes.
The spoiler.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much because I want to plug it. I want to get people stoked about it. I'm excited I can't wait for this episode. And I'm going to be sitting in front of my computer because I apparently picked the worst place possible to do a podcast because there has been an airplane overhead every 30 seconds. I have to put on mute, you know, while I'm listening to you guys. I think we must be right next to an airport because this is ridiculous. I've never seen so many airplanes. The good news is I don't see any chemtrails today, which is odd. I think they took Mother's Day off. They're like, let's not kill our mothers for one day. No chemtrails today, guys. Because usually here in Central Florida, we're right by the Patrick's Air Force Base, and our sky is riddled in just like, it looks like tic-tac-toe up in the sky all the time here. I mean,
wow.
I'm surprised I'm not autistic. Maybe I am autistic. I don't know. But yeah, today they took the day off. There's no chemtrails in the sky today. So that's fantastic.
Those
mothers and their mother lovers. That's right.
But you
they think that by taking a day off, it's going to save their mom because they're idiots, you know?
Yeah, well, nothing's going to save them like that. But yeah,
you know what's going to save them? We're going to save them. We're going to save them. We're saving the day right now. We're doing it.
I've
done.
Put my trust in God. Yeah, I hope God will save them. That's yeah, they need to figure that out. But
I think he took the day off, so I think it's our job. We're working for God.
Well,
he took the day off.
God
took the day off. We're working for him. We're doing God's work.
I've never seen God take a day off. Never seen him take a day off. But he does.
Well, there was that seventh day, right? He worked for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, he took the day off. We're still on that seventh day. That seventh day is actually all we've been living.
I would debate you on that, but sure. Because
we're
going to
have an episode
rest.
About how this is the seventh day or not. That's a great episode.
Church
Boom.
On the seventh day. Here we go. Okay.
Yep. Sunday, day of rest.
All,
Shema
all
Shabbos.
Right. It's all relevant.
That's right.
I stay away from all that.
I want
I love it.
I want to expand on the talks in 91. Not only did we have Richardson talking about the New World Order and, you know, how important it is.
Oh, I love that guy.
But a couple of days later, yeah, he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's awesome.
A couple of days later, the then Secretary of Defense, Richard Cheney, had more pressing problems on his mind as he addressed major defense problems of the 21st century. Now, PNAC, right? So he had a nice discussion about PNAC. And then a couple days later, same year, former Secretary of State.
I'm going to stop you right there, and I hate to keep interrupting, but, like, you know, we throw around terms like PNAC, like everyone knows what that means. That is an acronym for the Project for the New American Century, a think tank founded by William Criscoll, a neoconservative, I guess you could call him a philosopher, a political pundit. And in this Project for a New American Century think tank, you have people contributing like Francis Fukuyama, you have Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice. I'm sure these names all sound very familiar because they were all part of George W. Bush's cabinet when he was the president of the United States, of course, during 2001 when 9/11 happened. So,
yes,
you know, if you look at this project
out,
for a new bit, I'm sorry?
We got to point out that this speech was given in 1991.
Yeah, so this is literally 10 years before 2001. And then the Project for a New American Century document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, came out, I believe, in either 1999 or 2000. I think it came out in 99. And then in 2000, they added a couple things. There was some addendums. And we have that document, again, at darkdocs.com. You can look that up. And if you look at page 91, it calls for a new catalytic event, like a new Pearl Harbor, in order to gather public support in order to rebuild America's defenses. 1 year later, 9/11 happens, and we did exactly that.
Yes. Like,
so in 91, what were they talking about with PNAC there?
Just says major defense problems of the 21st century by Dick Cheney. The following speaker, the big speaker that they closed the whole thing with, was former Secretary of State George Shultz. And he then was a fellow at the Hoover Institution.
Mm-hmm.
And he closed the encampment with Agenda for America.
Hmm.
Now, we've slowly gotten a few of these talks. We have a couple of them. We'll keep looking. We'll find them.
Yeah, I really want to hear the Dick Cheney one because, I mean, this is a guy that he ran on the morning of 9/11. He essentially ran a drill with the North American Air Defense, NORAD, called Valiant Warrior. And in this drill, they were scrambling, you know, jets from NORAD to different locations, including the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And at the same time, allegedly, we had these hijacked public airliners, you know, where people who have been identified as people who have had ties to the State Department, including, of course, Osama bin Laden, you know, CIA State Department codenamed Tim Osman, who was a member of the Mujahideen, the freedom fighters back in the 70s. If you watch the film Charlie Wilson's War starring Tom Hanks, they talk all about this and how the United States gave money for arms, for bombs, for the freedom fighters to fight the Russians back in the 70s. You know, because, you know, it was a bleeding heart kind of thing. You know, they went over there, they saw that you know, these kids were getting blown up and this and that. And they painted the whole thing as like, oh, we were just like helping fighting those dirty communists, you know, Russian, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, no, we're funding terrorists. We were funding people that were running terrorist campaigns that were doing the same thing to people over there. And so it was a back and forth that it wasn't the United States problem. We were spending our money for other people's problems. And, you know, they called it nation building. It's not nation building. It's empire. It's our Anglo-Saxon American waspy empire building that we've been working on this whole time. It's all for control, for power, for oil, for resources, yeah, for land. And again, like these people, they're talking about a new world order. How can we push a new world order on these people? Ah, well, we'll just like act like we're helping everybody, and we're actually just trying to take over the world, just like, you know, every other psychotic, power-hungry empire since the dawn of mankind. And go ahead.
President Nixon in 1992 gave a lakeside talk, and it was the need to assist democracy in Russia. Now, wow, right?
Yeah, why is that our problem? Why are a bunch of guys meeting in California, United States, talking about how we're going to push democracy, which we're not even a democracy? I'm sick of people. Every time I hear someone say, this is a democracy, this is an attack on our democracy, I want to punch them in the mouth because they are a fucking liar. They are spreading disinformation about our federal republic. I'll say it again. I'm not a Republican, but you cannot deny, if you look up what kind of government the United States of America is, we're not a democracy. We have the democratic ideals, you know, in some parts of our government, but by definition, our country is a federal republic. We're a federation of states, independent sovereign states, and we work together under a federal government, under our federal republic. We are not a democracy. And so why are we pushing something that we're not even on a country that we should have no power over?
Yeah. And it ties into our experience a few years ago when, you know, it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and this tall dude in a really nice suit walks out, and he's this Italian diplomat. And he's telling us that he is one of five Bay Area consulates asked to be, you know, present for this lakeside talk. Now, I'm thinking maybe those are NATO countries because he's from Italy. I don't know. But he said that the talk was how to deal with Vladimir Putin, you know?
Yeah. Vlad the Impaler.
He looked a bit freaked out. He was very, you know, he comes out, he sees us, he asks us what we're doing there. We told him, you know, hey, you know, we don't care too much for what's happening in Syria. You know, we don't like the banking structure, you know, a couple things, you know. And he's like, oh, wow, you'd really hate it in there because that's everything that is in there, you know. And he told us he didn't know what the Grove even was until they told him that he's going to go there. Crazy. And then he told us that, and then, you know, he's just like, have a good day. He walked away.
I love it. They act like they don't know. Oh no, I got an invite in, you know, my email, so yeah. I flew across the world to show up to this thing. I have no idea what it. You know goddamn well what you're going to. You know what you're doing. You know what you're a part of. You know who you are, and you know you're the enemy, and that's why you're lying to us.
Yeah, it was unprecedented that he came out and said that to us. You know, wow.
Yep. It's brazen. They think you're dumb. They think you are like everyone else that watches their CNBC and their Fox News and their CNN. And, you know, if you're next level, you're watching Russia Today and, you know, more independent media outlets. And Still, they don't talk about this stuff on there. They don't talk about the Bilderberg Group. They don't talk about the Club of Rome. They don't talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Federalist Organization. You need to look these up, people. You need to, in fact, a great resource on darkdocs.com, if you haven't already, and I would imagine most of you have not, because I know people in the truth community, I would even argue maybe even you two, haven't even listened to all of William Cooper's work on Mystery Babylon and secret societies. Have you guys been listening to The Hour of the Time? Did you guys ever catch any of those?
I caught a couple.
It's fantastic. If you go under audio on darkdocs.com, also hourofthetime.com is the official website run by the children of William Cooper, who was a podcaster. He's one of the first podcasters back in the late 80s, early 90s. He wrote the book Behold a Pale Horse, which talks about all of this, the Bohemian Grove, secret societies, their origins, what they're about, what are their common goals, what do they all have in common. And his podcast, Hour of the Time, is a great resource, and it's all in the public domain. It's all open source, and that's why we were able to download the whole archive and re-upload it to our to our website. And we got complete permission to share all of this. No advertisement. We got a lot of our ethos as a broadcasting network to have Eternal Affairs Media. They have ads, they have a lot of overhead. They're the reason why we're on Blog Talk Radio right now talking about this. But darkdocs.com, we host our own site, we pay the bills, and we refuse to have any advertisers, because once you have advertisers, you have people telling you what to do. You have people that say, if you can't say this, and if you do say this, we will deplatform you. And that's what's happening on Facebook. That's what's happening on Twitter. And it's what's going to continue to happen. And the only way for you to have real free speech, of course, there's new free social media platforms that claim to have real free speech, like Mew. We just jumped on Mew. So you can look up Dark Docs and Sacred Owls on there. But we'll see how long that lasts and if they get compromised, because everyone, seems to eventually be like, they want to get bought out. You have a lot of these podcast networks that are trying to have subscription services, and you have to pay, like Netflix, $10 a month or whatever it is for you to listen to podcasts. And then they still have advertisements. I got really frustrated. Hulu, for example, you pay Hulu, $10, $14 a month, whatever it is. And, Netflix, they don't have any advertisements, but Hulu, it's about the same price. And now they still have commercial breaks that you can't fast forward through. You can't stop. You have to watch them. So now you are paying for a monthly service, and then you have to pay for your internet and, your electric bill and all that stuff. And then they're still going to throw advertisements at you, and it's only going to get worse because their platform doesn't work. A for-profit media conglomerate is not a profitable venture, and they know that, and they're drowning, and they're going to go bankrupt in no time. Mark my words. We've all been predicting it. However, darkdocs.com, I don't care if no one donates. I don't care. I mean, of course, I would love, the more people that donate, we'll have more shows for you. We'll have more documentaries. We'll have more time to. Right now, what you see on darkdocs.com is about 2%, and that number is actually dropping because we keep getting new content. People keep sending us new amazing videos they're putting out on YouTube and this and that, and those videos are getting blocked and banned and pulled, flagged. And you can't watch them. Once they upload them, you might be able to see it for like a week or so, and then they'll find something wrong with it, and they will pull that video, and you will no longer be able to see it. So they send it to us. We download their videos, and we upload them to our server, and we will never pull them. And in fact, every time YouTube blocks or bans a video, we have a little badge of honor that says banned on YouTube. So every now and then you'll see a thumbnail image on the website that has a little like a YouTube frowny face, and it says banned on YouTube. And we wear that like a badge of honor, because that means that video just became exclusive to YouTube, and I'm sorry, exclusive to darkdocs.com, unless someone else is doing what we're doing. And we encourage you to do that too. We want you to compete with us. I want you to make a website. In fact, right now for $150, if you donate to info@darkdocs.com on PayPal, we will send you a 1 terabyte hard drive through the mail with our entire website and our entire archive. You can buy a domain name and hosting from whoever you want, upload our website, and we will not come after you. And you can change the logo, you can call it whatever you want. We want this information to stay open, free, and in the public domain. And it's up to you guys, you know, to keep this alive. You know, but they're going to keep coming after us. They're going to keep trying to censor us, and it's up to you to really help us spread the word. If you don't have any money to give, you can simply just share our stuff on social media. Red pill the hell out of everyone. We have stickers that, you know, we can mail you that you can slap on stuff. So hit us up.
That's brilliant.
Damn right. That was awesome.
Oh, by the way, stickerguy.com, which I'm happy to plug. They don't give us any money or anything. But stickerguy.com has been doing our stickers for over a decade. They are having a special this month that for $36... You can get 250 metallic silver vinyl stickers with like midnight blue ink, and they always have a monthly special. So we just got the Dark Doc stickers that you guys have. Now we have them in like metallic silver and blue. They look amazing. So those are going to be coming in for this tour, and that's another way. You know, instead of us sending us to you, you know, you could give us a donation of like $40 that would include shipping, and then we can send you out 250 stickers for darkdocs.com, and you can slap them wherever you want.
Right. Yeah, I'll get some resist stickers made. That sounds good.
Yeah. Resist tyranny, resist the grove. Definitely. In fact, you know, if you guys don't have art, I'm happy to do the art for that, because we need some more of those. I want Resist Tyranny, you know, to definitely, it's a great domain. I mean, I love what you guys have done so far, but I think it hasn't been updated since like 2017. You know, we have a lot of stuff to update on that site as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We definitely need help with that one, I think.
Yeah, so. I'm happy. You give me the back end on that, and I'll start, you know, going to town on it.
Nice. Very nice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you've put together so much great stuff just on so many different topics, and I think when you think about dark docs, it's like it's such a great way to just say, you know, because and really now with this whole purge, this whole media purge, I won't be shocked if you start getting flooded with a lot of more videos that nobody else can actually host. It's definitely getting worse. And I think heading up into 2020, it's going to get a lot worse. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2020 is going to be, and these guys are all into numerology. You know, they do everything in like these, like, you know, they use incrementalism to just kind of like, I always use the analogy of like, you know, the New World Order is like a scummy guy at Lover's Lane. You know, you know, you're the chick with your little short skirt in the convertible, right? And then, like, you're like, no, not right now. And they're like, oh, come on, baby. And they keep kind of slipping their hand up your skirt. And then you're like, no. And they're like, all right, fine. And then, like, you know, then they try to grab your tits. You know, that's what the New World Order, they just constantly try to fucking get a little bit further when you keep saying no. They are the rapiest fucking people that I've ever seen. And that is exactly why Joe Biden is their front runner. Because this guy, he'll just go around grabbing people. Oh, it's okay, baby. You know, like, let's have this little photo op, and like, he'll be like whispering in little girls' ears and like playing with their hair. Get the fuck off of my kid, you fucking creep. I mean, why aren't they saying that? Why? And I show these videos to people, and they're like, you know, why are these parents just sitting there and just like smiling and laughing? And oh, that's Joe. He's like that. You know, I'll tell you why. Because these people are bought and paid for, and they understand that if you're going to play ball, if you're going to have a place at the table of the New World Order, you got to let these creeps do whatever they want to your kids. You know, if you say anything like, hey, you know, fuck off, you know, that's it. You're done. You're never going to be in the White House ever again. They will kick your ass out. You're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your house. And then you're going to get, you know, two shots to the back of your head, and they're going to deem it a suicide.
Well, and that's why I do think with Trump, it's kind of different. I don't think it's a coincidence, and you probably know better, Christian, but it doesn't seem like it's a coincidence that Donald Trump gets voted in, and now we're seeing all of these weird prostitution things that are happening, you know, all these people that are getting busted. Is that a coincidence?
Honestly, Donald Trump, when he got into office, I couldn't believe it. I mean, and I'm not a never Trumper, you know, like I don't think he was the best businessman, you know. I mean, the tax records that just got released and stuff, they tell the tale that a lot of the Democrats have been, you know, going on and on about. Yeah, sure. He's, you know, he has a kind of like venture capitalist kind of predatory marketing, you know, a business model, I guess you could call it. And, you know, it's kind of a failure. He's kind of $1 billion in the red, and then he goes bankrupt and then does a new thing and this and that. But that's neither here nor there. When I look at his foreign policy, you know, and I see the way he held himself at the United Nations, saying, hey, I'm a nationalist. I don't want your New World Order bullshit. I don't want to bow down to the UN. You know, we believe in national sovereignty. So it's like, it blows me away that they even let this guy in. I have no idea how that happened. I mean, because, of course, I thought Hillary was going to get into office. I thought she's the establishment man. You know, she's, you know, she holds her own with the guys. And what blows me away even more is like, that's the New World Order candidate, right? Well, it's a woman, yet the Bohemian Grove is an all-male encampment, so she's not even allowed to go there. We're, you know, the guys running stuff are so sexist, they won't have women there. They, you know, women had to have protests and fights to even get jobs there, which blows me away. Why would a woman even want to work there? But there's such a big operation in Northern California where, you know, when I talk to locals, there's no jobs, there's no economy, there's just the Bohemian Grove. And, you know, so if you are going to get a job in that area, it's going to be parking cars or giving food or whatever other services to these moguls, you know, at their, like, little encampments. Of course, you have the midsummer encampment, but then you have the high jinks and low jinks, and they also do, like, weddings and stuff on the property. We have a whole archive. The only time they let women in is like when it's privately rented out for weddings and stuff like that. But
and on,
you know,
Spring Jinx, they have their whole families come.
Pretty great.
So
Summer Jinx, did we?
I have pictures
Jinx
of little kids playing in front of the owl. It blows me away.
Yeah, Spring Jinx.
Yeah,
it's the creepiest damn thing I've ever seen.
June 3rd through June 9th. Spring Jinx,
oh,
Bohemian
man.
Grove. If you want to go down and meet some of the wives.
Now, even for those, I mean, in order to pass through the gates, you have to, it's never open to the public, am I right? Like, there's never a time where you can just, like, as a member of the public, you have to have some sort of invitation. Your name has to be on some sort of list as a guest.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
You can be
so anybody, you know,
like
all
a...
these pictures that have been, you know, that I've seen, that a lot of them I got from, like, you know, the WikiLeaks, Guccifer archives and things like that. And so that means that, like, someone has been sharing these photos on either social media or elsewhere, and then they ended up in the public domain in order for someone to grab them, unless, like, they hack someone's email, you know, which is possible. That's how they got the Podesta emails and the Clinton emails, which you guys need to read. I mean, I'm sure you guys have read a bunch of it, but anyone listening, you got to read those Podesta emails. You got to read those Clinton emails because they are damning.
Damning.
No one's talking about it.
In the damning how?
Oh, as damning against, you know, them running a pedophile ring. It's damning against them. You know, worried about going to prison, and I believe Hillary Clinton was quoted in saying that they're going to hang us all if they see what these emails have. You know, the pedophile codes being used in the John Podesta emails, the talk of pizza and handkerchiefs and hot dogs and having MAP-coded handkerchiefs and things like that. MAP is an acronym for minor attracted person. And why would you have a MAP-coded handkerchief? Why, you know, it's like if you read these emails, they don't make any, they're like drunk text. They don't make any sense.
Yeah, they are.
Unless you look at the FBI pedophile code, where, you know, it is literally, it's a, the most odd, like, you know, childhood cereal box decoder ring thing that if you actually look at the FBI document on what all these words mean and you substitute the words, now it makes sense. And, I mean, there's plenty of videos we have on Dark Docs that go into great detail, email by email, with all of the reference numbers to, you know, the actual source in WikiLeaks where you can find the original emails. And, yeah, they're very damning if you actually read them. And no one does because, I mean, I'm not going to say no one. I hate speaking in absolutes. I always default to it. But a lot of people don't because who has time for that? You know, we do. And why do we have the time for it? Because we make the time for it. Because we have a morbid curiosity and we want to know the truth. And we're not alone. There's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of us out there that have seen these things, and we try to tell people, but there's billions of us, and the majority of people will be like, yeah, that sounds too crazy. There's no way that that's going on, so I'm just not going to believe you, because that's going to, I'm already depressed, you know? Most people are like, I'm already on like 5 or 6 antidepressants and psychotropic drugs, and I have to, you know, drink myself to sleep and, you know, smoke a couple bowls in order not to, you know, drown myself every day, you know, then you throw all of this terrible stuff at them and they're like, nah, I just want to kill myself, you know? So, I get it. You know, I understand. And, it takes a certain kind of person to detach yourself and still have a good, healthy life, outside of, information warfare, in order to, you know, function as a human being and not just give yourself cancer by, you know, constantly looking at negative, terrible, horrible things, you know?
Yes.
On that topic, I remember, you know, Brendan and I were talking a little bit about, you know, I really got upset a couple of episodes ago, you know, because a couple friends of ours were talking about, you know, how this kind of stuff, it really affects and triggers people that, you know, have been victims of like sexual abuse and things like that. That it's really important to, you know, take a break. It's really important to, not just do this all the time. Everyone can deal, has different tolerance levels. Everyone, you know, has different, amounts of time that they can spend, you know, looking for the truth and finding, you know, sifting through garbage, just terrible things, before it really affects them. I mean, myself included. I find my, you know, there was a time in my 20s when I was doing all this stuff that I didn't know that. And I got very depressed. I got antisocial. I got negative. I could not go to a party and not talk about this stuff. Like, you know, 2 beers in and, you know, I'm talking about Pizzagate and pissing everyone off at the party. And that's not okay either. You know, there has to be a balance where, like, you know, certain times, certain groups of people, you know, it's okay to talk about it. And then even within those groups, sometimes people are like, yeah, let's talk about something else. And I never argue the point, you know, and that's very important. If someone's like, yeah, I believe you and I'm interested, but I can't right now, you really need to just, it's all about consent. And that's like, you know, what we've always been talking about. If you care, which is what we do, you know, we are care. We are dull care. And there's nothing dull about it. In fact, I think it's very exciting to care. And yes, they paint it as something that, oh, if you care, you're just, you know, you're just a dark cloud that enters the room, and you're like Eeyore and Winnie the Pooh, just bringing everyone down, you know? And that's not the case. You know, it's very exciting to be on the good side. I love it. I feel like I like to paint it as, you know, if this is Star Wars, you know, we're Han Solo and we're the rebels. We're fighting the Death Star, and it's fantastic. You know, and when we win, and we will, it's going to be just this beautiful thing, a ragtag group of, you know, the disenfranchised that wake enough people up. A lot of people say it just takes like 13% of the population to wake up to all of this stuff to overthrow the powers that be. And we just, as human history has shown, we've just never really gotten together on a global scale and had that 13%. And we're getting very close. We have the yellow vests over in Paris, and now multiple countries all through the, you know, the falling European Union that are fighting out against their elites. We need to have our own.
Good to see you.
Yeah, take care. Yeah, I'll call her. Yeah. Seems like the party we're at is rounding third base. So I'm going to probably jump off the phone and let you guys finish off the show. But, you know, just to finish my thought is that I'd say right now we have, you know, conservatively, like let's say like 7 to 8% of the world's population that is maybe semi-woke in one way or another. They understand, you know, that yes, there are secret societies, yes, there are these roundtable groups, yes, there are these think tanks, yes, they are the ones behind the militaries of the world that are having these coups and these false flags and these wars. And they're using the media and all their media outlets in order to have us all fight against each other. And that's why you can't get any two groups to really get together. And I think it's a beautiful and wonderful and magical thing that people like you and me and, you know, can all get together. And even though we don't agree on everything, we have a lot of common goals. And we all just want to be free and live and let live. So, you know, we have to continue to reach out to new people and get them to be a part of our network, start their own network, but for all of our networks to work together. And I really do think, you know, we're coming close to a point where we can galvanize enough people to really fight back in a really meaningful way. And with that, I'll leave you. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. Thank you to all of our listeners. And you guys, I hope you can continue the dialogue. I will listen to the rest of the show tomorrow. And then we will pick it up on Tuesday with a gray stage. Thank you very much. And take care, guys.
Cheers. Great analysis, Christian.
Awesome.
Good job.
Very awesome.
Great.
So now we get to hijack this show. We get to take this show over. All right.
Wow.
So we can change everything now here. Hey, have you read the Mike Hansen book, The Bohemian Grove Cult of Conspiracy? Have you read this book?
I have not.
Oh man, I'm going to get both of you guys this book. I was thinking of contacting him to see if I could get like a discounted price so I can actually pass some of these out, because what I love about this book is it puts everything into one book, right? It puts like so many different things, and there's so many different things that he doesn't cover we still don't know exactly about, but he kind of, it's like, what is this, like 300 pages here, almost 400 pages of just really good data. And it's really written where it's not like he's like Mike Hansen is saying, okay, this is what's happening here, this is what they're doing. He really just puts all of the different data, what this person says, what that person says, and kind of just puts it into one little neat book that you can start with. So I would say if you're really looking for a great place to start with the Bohemian Grove stuff, I would say start here. This is a really good spot here, especially on page 212, where it does mention the Franklin cover-up. Some really good stuff. Lots of great photos in there, too. And I would just say anyone who's serious about actually researching this, not someone who just wants to look at it for 10 minutes and thinks that, well, if they can't solve it for me in 10 minutes, then it's not worth my time. You know, these real things, these real cults, these real issues that we are having, that is some of the big things, because they do try to make it so complicated, so confusing, that people just give up and stop looking. And so it does take a real researcher. It does take you to actually invest some time, in some real time, to treat this as a serious issue, not as entertainment, because this is not an entertaining topic. This is a serious thing. When we're talking about possibly sacrificing care, is different than possibly sacrificing people, the people that are trying to control this world, that are trying to lead us, to trying to trick us into doing what they want us to do. Those are the big issues, and that stuff takes time. So
I'd be very happy in interviewing Mr. Hansen.
All right, good, because I'm going to reach out to him and see if he would be interested in that. Man, I would love to get him out there one year. He's in Texas. So he's doing a lot of good things out there in Texas. And I don't know, maybe even Alex Jones. Like, why not? You know, if you want to get some mainstream media,
sit across from him and ask him a few questions.
I have questions for that guy.
I have questions unrelated to the Bohemian Grove, really. But I would, you know, it's like he's been doing this for a long time, and I think if he wants to get some media coverage that he wouldn't otherwise get, this is where you got to go. This is where it all started for him. So 19 years later, 20 years later, why not go back there?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you'll get off of that most wanted list or whatever happened. That whole thing was crazy too. All these people that are getting purged, that are getting taken off of social media. Some of this stuff just seems kind of like it's theater. Some of it seems like it's theater. And I know it's like a lot of people are kind of pushing me to, you know, to post more about it and talk more about what is happening with Alex Jones and with those guys. But, you know, there's also a chance that these are contracts that are coming to an end, not necessarily just real researchers who just want to put out real data. So I've been having a hard time with that, and I go back and forth on many of these people because, you know, they have to eat and they have to make a living too. But at the same time, you know, if you're dependent on the money, if you're dependent on the crowdsourcing, on any of that, you're going to have a really hard time staying true to yourself and staying true to what actually brought you here.
They don't have any problem trying to sell ads on Resist the Grove Facebook page. You know? Like, boost this so everybody can see it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's their target. But it's like, well, what are you targeting? What are you targeting for, and what is the whole purpose? I think with a lot of these people, it's like, well, what is your real purpose here? So it either gets into they're in it for money, they're in it for fame, or they're real people that are really bothered by this. And, you know, I know other times there's spiritual things where they feel called. And for me as a Christian, many times I feel called to do something, not with every case, because you just can't. You have to pick those battles. But when we're talking about children and talking about murder and stuff like that, those things obviously hit me harder than some of the other stuff, maybe like money laundering or just political criminals, politicians doing the same thing that they've always done for years and years. You know, that stuff is not as important. The child trafficking, human trafficking, period. Slavery, any
human
of that
trafficking.
Stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's a big one, right? Like, when, I mean, in the last 20 years, it just seems like it's at the forefront now. And I don't care who brought it there or what has brought us to that, but I think it's really good that more people are now talking about this. I think the whole Smallville, I don't know if you know that person from Smallville.
Yeah.
She got busted, right? And so that case really was like, oh, okay, well, maybe there is some truth to all of these people that have been talking about this for years and years. And there's many people, I mean, I don't know one person who doesn't know somebody who has been sexually abused by somebody in their past. You know, it's
exactly.
Way too common, and nobody talks about it.
And the systemic guarding of the topic of anything improper with children or sex around the Bohemian Club or Bohemian Growth by Mary Moore's years of protesting or in newspapers is ridiculous. And I mean, like for me, one of the biggest things here, you know, personally, it's a private club. They can do whatever the hell they want. I don't care. That's cool. Have fun. You're who you are. Nothing I can do to change that. You know, all right. But, you know, burn an effigy of me in front of a hamster. I don't really care, you know. But but honestly, you got these talks. Like I was reading that earlier, listing off these topics and these people. And then we know the world events that come after that. We're living in it. We're living in the results of it. And then for the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department to be paid money by the Grove to sit out there and add extra security is insane to me, when they know for a fact that even if it's like 2% of the people going to it, you know, 2% of 2,000 people, that's still a bit of people that are going into the communities and meeting up with prostitutes that are brought in from all over the country, if not the world. And that's that level of assistance by the local constabulary is blows my mind. I don't understand how, I mean, and just, I mean, Mary Moore, you bring up hookers. I heard her personally say, oh yeah, yeah, no, no, no. We just, yeah. Okay. That's going to happen. Men are men. You know, no, men.
That's okay. That's fine.
That's not cool
no
to me, man. So
that's what
I mean.
They're saying. They're okay with that. No, and that's not cool, and I'm not cool with that either.
I respect all their hard work, but you know, the more that I know, the more that I question, and it's an ongoing process for me.
Constantly. Yeah, I mean, they have no problem with that, but the other thing is, where are these prostitutes coming from? Are these part of the child sex trafficking rings and all that stuff that is being brought here? Is it part of that structure?
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember a couple years back, there was somebody there who came, and she came with the Google Glasses guy, and she was a young girl, and she was saying that they found her in the tree in the forest or something, and they brought her here. She looked like she was just whacked out.
She did look whacked out.
You were there for that.
I got the impression she was just pushing our buttons, but she did look totally like tweaked out or something. Man. I don't know what.
Yeah,
I got some good video.
They all did.
Google guy.
You check and see.
Oh.
Yeah, the Google guy. The Google Glasses guy. That guy was something else.
I got to do a video about him.
Yeah, you should. Like, we got about 1 minute, 18 seconds left. So the first time that
this is fun.
I tried this. So. This was great. And now we get to take all of the credit because we're at the end and Christian isn't. So this is our show now. We're taking over. Join us next week, Dark Ducks number 23. We are here, Brendan and Greg. Showed up at the Bohemian Grove, showed up on Dark Docs, and here we are, Dark Docs Digest. It's now our show. Sorry, Christian. I have to find another one. We're also going to rename the website, too. It's going to be Greg and Brendan's darkdocs.com. So make sure you go there. Check our stuff out. No, we're just kidding. Just messing around.
I love Christian's work.
I do too. I do too. I was just listening to some of his music. So I was going to ask him to kind of play some of it with us, but we'll save that for next time, I suppose. Next time there will be not only story time with Brendan, but there will be music time with Christian. There we go.
All right. I look forward to that.
I think that'll be fun. That'll be great.
Beatboxing by Greg.
Yeah. I'll figure something out. I'll just make something up. I'll just take somebody else's and just take all the credit. But I think that's it.
Cheers, Greg. Have a great weekend. Say hi to your mom.
All right. Will do. Same to you, brother. All right.
Thank you. Keep up the work.
Invest in your education and sanity at Eternal Affairs Media and DarkDocs.com.
We hope the information you received was beneficial to your quest for truth and justice. Please visit us online at DarkDocs.com to download shows, movies, other podcasts, PDF documents, music and much more for free. No advertisements, no sign up, no terms of use, no censorship, no control. This is information warfare. This is the end of the transmission.